Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Yeah, that's what's happening. That's Chuck D. It's perfect timing. I felt welcome to the Terror Dome would be something that we needed to hear. That's Public Enemy. That's a remix. Chuck D and the boys. We're doing a special edition. This is Saturday evening. You know all the shit that's been going down in the last week. Let me first let you know where you are. If you don't, I'm Citizen Payne. This is K. Thompson Live. It is now K's son. I am K's son and friends. Legendary newsman Wayne Gilman, a legendary historian Byron Saunders. And I had to bring in some fellas tonight. We had to have a war council. So many of you know about the Drop Squad, how we roll. So I think you guys are in for a special treat this evening to hear the return of some of the Drop Squad members on our affiliate networks, the brothers. Mature brothers, you know, like the brothers that we talk about, or the brothers I have co-hosted every week here on this show. We're talking about what's going down, the murder of our brother, and the reactions by all of these people. I was going to say devils, but not all of them are devils. So let's get with it. First, let me talk to you about white supremacy real quick. You know, we talked about this before, and there's some young ones who brought up the notion that maybe we shouldn't vote for Joe Biden, and I understand the notion and the concept. However, the timing is way off. White supremacy, let me break it down for you, white, black, and alike, and whoever else. White supremacy is the system that we live in, right? All of us, white, black, everybody. And it's all white supremacy, what Joe Biden says, what Cindy, Central Park Cindy said, of course, the Gestapo in Minneapolis, and of course, with Donnie DeCani, the racist in chief, it's all white supremacy. So, there are those, the white supremacists, the racists, are those who actively engage in the promotion and the continuation of white supremacy, meaning that when they know they have those advantages and they continue to have those advantages and to perpetuate, to keep those advantages. And to keep reigning supreme over you and I and everybody else. That's what white supremacy is. That's what someone who practiced white supremacy, like the girl, practiced it that day. And you could practice it whether you know or not, whether you're actively practicing it, or whether as white people they're just a benefit of white supremacy, because a lot of them are. They don't even know they're walking around being beneficiaries of white supremacy. But let me tell you something. If you have a question about that, my Caucasian friend, if you can walk, eat, sleep, be in your own house, have your daughter selling water out outside on the street, try to have a barbecue, any one of those things, then you have been a beneficiary of white supremacy, because you can do those things freely without having somebody to call the cops on you. And certainly you can live freely without having some racist, barbaric, savage, monkey animal put his foot on your neck. Well, the people that don't engage but are beneficiaries of white supremacy are the people who walk around not knowing that that's their benefit. These are the people, like I would venture to say, a little bit like Joe Biden, you know, people that are cool with you, but they're so comfortable in their white supremacist system, they don't even know what's inappropriate to say. if they haven't been around a lot of black people, but they're open people, they don't know what's appropriate to say. So when you share your rap love with them, don't get mad when they say the N-word too, because they hear you saying it and they're not trying to insult you. They're just trying to enjoy in the revelry of the community that you have chosen, or of the culture that you have chosen to share with them. And this is how you can tell, I'll give you a hint, how you can tell the white supremacist who chooses to perpetuate white supremacy and the person who has been a beneficiary, the white person, of white supremacy, is that when you point out these things to that person that you know that have offended you or would offend the black community, and they say, my bad, and they try to make amends to it, they try to understand where you're coming from, that's a white person who has had the benefits of white supremacy but does not want to have those benefits, does not necessarily perpetuate the need to keep up a white supremacist system and take the advantages from that. So let's understand that when we decide whether we want to vote for Joe Biden or not. I can't imagine that the people would choose to vote for Trump, some of these people that are bringing up the questions about Joe Biden. But what's the alternative? What's your plan? Because the ones that are talking all this, they seem to have the money to withstand the COVID-19, meaning that don't rabble up the people if you ain't living like the people. If you're a rich music mogul, excuse me, or someone who has a successful radio show, and you start rabbling up the masses of people who don't have the same economic benefits that you have, that have to deal with those everyday consequences that you might not have to deal with as a person of stature and means, then you are being disingenuous, because it ain't going to hit you the same way it hits them. So then you're being disingenuous and just being full of it, unless you're going to walk it like they walk it. But that's my perspective on the issue. I see my brother Wayne Gilman is on the line with me. Let's get his perspective, because he's got one that is packed with experience in history. Wayne, how you doing, brother?
Hey, well, thank you for making me feel so old. But, Eric, you know, I have to agree with you 1,000%. And I think, you know, I don't know if the brother's listening or not, but I think we need to bring Charlemagne on one evening with us on a Wednesday night, make it available that he could, you know, come on and discuss this outright, because there are other people out there. We're not a monolith as a community, and we have a lot of opposing views out here, but we are in a highly volatile situation right now. We cannot afford to make mistakes. You know, I said this Wednesday, I've repeated again, and it seems like things have escalated since we did the show the other night. So, you know, it just saddens me to see things that I lived through when I was a child in the 60s. I remember, you know, Martin Luther King being shot, and how Brooklyn, part of Bed-Stuy that I grew up in, you know, turned into a killing field. The cops against the local community, and at that time, Bed-Stuy was the largest concentration of black people in this country, bar none. It didn't even far more than Prince George's County in Maryland. The deal is that, you know, you see things that have happened 30, 40 years ago, and you think that it is over, but this is a systemic problem that goes back 400 years, and it will happen again. It will happen again unless there's a change. And it's not just one police department. It's got to be a global situation. It just can't be something just relegated to Minneapolis and New York. And there's got to be some uniformity in the law. You know, the way these people are trained. And that's it. And you know, again, we all know that a fish stinks from the head. And we're going to hopefully do something about what's stinking in this country at the very top come November. But we cannot afford to get caught up in speculation as to whether somebody is worthy of challenging the current administration, when they've gotten so far ahead in destroying the system. We heard William Barr give a news conference, a rare news conference, this afternoon. Another one of these West Side Manhattan types who grew up at the same time as Donald Trump, and now he's the Attorney General, talking about, yeah, all these people who are exciting violence may be the provocateurs, part of the Boogaloo Boys gang, but they're not all leftists. What about those folks that stood up in the Michigan governor's house and had their AK-47 rifles strapped to their chest, you know, in front of the National Guard in that state? How, what are they, you know? How come no one talks? How come no one takes the holds up and conducts a news conference about that from the federal administration? Because this is part of an agenda. And I'm not saying that violence is the answer, you know, but we're going to have to be like Dr. King, Gandhi. All we, you know, we protest, but we got to protest within the confines of what the law is, not going to incite the violence, because once people see anarchy out there, it goes against us. It sets us back. And I understand, I'm angry. You know, George Floyd could have been my brother. Could have been me. Could have been you, Eric, Byron, any one of us. You know? And that's the thing that really gets to me. It just saddens me that we have this element in police precincts throughout the... There was a situation in Brooklyn last night where it was caught on film, where a woman who was protesting in front of Barclays, you know, a law enforcement figure just threw her on the side of the street. You know? And thank God that we can memorialize half this stuff that goes on now with not just the television cameras, but the cameras that we have with us. You know, we have to credit the 17-year-old female that caught the George Floyd thing in the sequence, you know. But, I mean, the sad part about it is that this element has been in existence for quite some time. I've covered a myriad of stories like this in New York over the years, and now that it's national, and I'm not just saying, it's always been out there. Forgive me. Let me back that up. This thing has always been out here, but thanks to social media and everything else that's going on in terms bringing the world together, it's like everybody's on the same level playing field. And the bottom line is more and more people are becoming aware of what's happening. I've had friends that moved out of New York thinking that if they were going to go to another state, that they would be immune to this kind of activity because of what happened back in the day. You know, but this is a global situation, man. There's just something very systemic. It's a poison within that police culture, and it has to be addressed. And until it is addressed on the national level, it will happen again. Mark my word.
Man, I agree with you, and there's some notions about policing. I'm getting ready to bring in a friend of mine who probably could give a little bit of a perspective on that. But just briefly about what you were saying about they were talking about agitators. It was on tape that they have a guy who allegedly is a cop was walking around breaking windows with a hammer trying to agitate the thing. And that helps to, like you said, make the cause look worse, because then it looks like anarchy and chaos, and it helps, and it works against the cause.
It advances the opposition's cause.
But eventually, unless you listen to the people, you know, Dr. King, everybody's quoting Dr. King's statement, the riots and all that are how the masses make themselves unheard when they don't have any recourse. There is something to be said about letting people know, but the practicality of revolution, so to speak, is not practical for us, and any general will tell you that. Just if you do the mathematics in terms of the numbers and the population and all that. So that's why that notion doesn't work to our advantage. And also, obviously, like you said, when they see us creating chaos, it's interesting how people want to dictate how angry someone can get when they've been wronged. And I don't think you can dictate how angry someone can. You can't dictate someone's grief, you know. And that's the whole thing about it. They keep murdering us for 400 years, or just within this month, it seemed like it happened every 2 weeks. So people are going to get frustrated. But let's bring my buddy in. I believe this is Brother Phil, an affiliate of the squad. What's up, Brother Phil? What's happening?
Hey, man. How you doing? How you doing, brothers?
Say hello to Wayne Gilman. You know the legendary newsman Wayne Gilman from WLIB Radio, Phil.
Wayne, I'm very honored to join you tonight. I've listened to this podcast, and it's an honor and a privilege to be with you tonight. How are you, brothers?
Equally.
Amongst all what we're seeing, with the images that we're seeing, and this is why Eric wanted us on, because, you know, my profession and what I do in my career has been creating images. That's what we do. We're in the film and television business. So what we try to do is create images which affect all the seven senses which God has given us to kind of react to what those things are. And I always feel the cameras is the second most powerful thing on the face of Earth outside of Mother Nature, because you will affect people that you'll never meet. Case in point, without the camera, we would not be having this discussion on this particular night, looking at the particular images that I am looking at as I'm talking to you in New York City, in Brooklyn, in Manhattan, in 30 different cities. It's a tsunami of an effect, of an emotional effect on this country. That you're right, Mr. Ellington, since maybe, you know, 30, 40 years ago, even more than that, 50 years ago, we haven't seen.
Without question.
And the reason why I wanted to bring Phil on too tonight too, just so everybody knows, like I said, he's an affiliate of the Drop Squad. He's at his own company, but we have a network of production companies and brothers that work with us. And these are black men. You know, we have we're a very diverse crew, but there's a attitude amongst all of us of strong black men, and you probably wouldn't catch us at protests, because if we come, we ain't coming to protests. So you know, something goes down with us. You know, we're not at that age where we're gonna be talking, and we're not gonna play no more. So that's why we're not showing up at the protests, because certain things ain't gonna go down. So and there's a perspective of us that creates, that have created it. That's why we all know each other. We all linked together. People that seen Drop Squad and seen our film and know what we're talking about, know where we're coming from and the perspective that we have. And just to see this lunacy. I was talking about earlier, Phil, about white supremacy. And in the business that we're in, and Wayne as well. You know, I talked about, Wayne heard this, Phil, you didn't hear it earlier, about white supremacy. There's a difference. You know, people want to find a reason to not vote for Joe Biden, talk about he's a white supremacist.
Yes.
But
yes,
it's all white supremacy. We all live within the system,
yes,
of white supremacy. So if you have a white friend who says some ignorant stuff that he shouldn't say or politically incorrect when he's in your presence or other people of color's presence, it doesn't mean that he's being a white racist or a white supremacist and trying to perpetuate that system. It means that,
absolutely,
the white supremacy system that he has been in has not taught him or not allowed him to learn the concern about other people and other cultures, because the system,
absolutely,
that they were brought up in, nobody ever had to check them. Nobody ever told them, you know, that ain't right, what you just said. But the way you tell the difference between the two is that when you do check them, that person that tries to be your friend, trying to understand, trying to relate to other races, what is his response? Is there his response to make amends and to say, I'm sorry, let me understand? Or is his response to say, too bad, F you, you know what? Because that's the Trump response. The other one is the Trump response. And we need to know,
right,
you know, the timing, the whole act, the whole notion of, like, should we vote for Joe Biden? You ain't black, all this other idiotic stuff, when the house is on fire right now. What y'all are,
right,
talking about is whether the rug matches the drapes. And we ain't got time to worry about that right now, because the house,
exactly,
is on fire. So we ain't got time to worry about the decorating. It's not to,
absolutely,
it's not to say,
right,
that they don't have valid points about that. It's to say now is not the time for that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having an honest discussion because of being naive or maybe even slightly ignorant. You know, each individual is their own personality magnet. So the time that would be attracted to me in my personality, or we become friends and have relationships, most likely are not the kind of people that would hear that and say, well, fuck you anyway. They're going to be inquisitive. And case in point, I've had discussions over the last 4 or 5 days with Caucasian friends and some people that I call family. Last name is Maylord. I found some Maylords in Switzerland 4 or 5 years ago that might or might not be related, not sure, but we call each other cousins. And they ask questions because they're in Switzerland. They don't know. And they weren't questions of being obnoxious. They just asked They didn't realize that this is something we live with every day. They didn't realize that this is something that we fear when we see the blue lights come on. And this is something I don't mind explaining, because if you're teaching and exposing without the attitude, that's the best way to make a difference in not the person you're talking to, but the generation that follows them. We got to be farmers and not harvesters. Harvesters want instant gratification. You harvest and you eat and you sell. When you're a farmer, you plan for the next crop. And so what our mission is as we move forward is not just for the generation now, it's for the ones we follow. And so that's what these conversations have to enlighten. That's what these conversations need to foster. And that's what we need to expose. You can be angry and be vociferous in your attitude, but you have to teach. You just can't stop what the problem is. If 10 people are watching a fire, 9 of those 10 people say, wow, there's a fire. Only one is going to call the fire department.
Well, Phil, I agree with you. I think there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of planting and waiting for things to harvest. But if you've been out here, I may have a couple of years on you. I know I do on Eric, and probably just a couple on Byron, if he's listening. But the deal is that we planted a long time ago, you know. And yes, we have gained. A lot of us are doing a lot better than what it was like for even my parents to come to this country as immigrants and try to assimilate to the American society just to get away from the hell that we were receiving in the third world. But the bottom line is that you figure at this stage of the game, after we've experienced 8 years with a stellar job that a president of color provided for us, in spite of all the frailties, in spite of all the opposition, we were not going through the nonsense that we're going through now. And the deal is that this man, like a drum major, has cultivated an environment that's been out here for so long, but it's coming to the fore. And I'm just trying to understand, where did we go wrong? I'm in my mid-60s, and I'm trying to understand what did we do? What did we forget that we are not bringing these millennials with us to a certain extent and understanding that we should not be going through this again? Why we didn't do enough to stop it 5 years ago with Eric Garner, 10 years ago with someone else, Amadou Diallo? How come, and those are New York stories, but it's across the country. This sickness is across the country.
Well, let me just say, Wayne, let me just jump in here. And this is a discussion that I was having earlier with Butch. He's going to be calling in. I was having a discussion with my dad, too, earlier. This, you know, there has been work done before us. The generation before us, they have done work. I mean, all you got to do, a lot of young cats now say, what's changed? Ain't nothing changed. Well, if you think nothing's changed, then ask your grandma. She'll tell you what's changed.
Right.
If you think nothing's changed, then ask your father. He'll tell you what's changed. So the frustration of young people, I understand that you mean my whole life is going to be spent having to deal with this? As I thought when I was a young kid, when my father would take me on his marches and make me aware of this and all this, I would think, well, it'll be okay by the time I get grown. Well, I'm grown, a little bit past grown. It ain't all right. It ain't changed. But each generation has done their part to put that brick in the wall to lift up further and further. And that's why I say when cats talk about it doesn't make sense to vote, it does make sense to vote. Because it's forward ever, backward never. So if you don't vote, you're not continuing to move the ship forward. It might be moving mighty damn slow, but we need to keep moving forward. And so that's what I say to the people. Also, too, when you talk to people, they say, oh, I need something more than someone died for my right to vote. I think what they're really saying is I need something more immediate. Hearing that people died for my right to vote was 50 years ago. So my response to them is, well, you know what? Now you got it. George Floyd died for your right to vote. Tamir Rice died for your right to vote. Eric Garner died for your right to vote. Because you're disrespecting them if you let that shit go down and don't take your ass to the poll and vote. And if you really want to get into the game and understand the chess game, then come back 2 years later and vote in the midterms. And then we need a strategy. So here's the strategy. Then when you go home in your state, vote in those local elections. Because you know what's happening? The state legislatures are determining where the country goes. So that's why these Republican state legislatures are doing all this crazy stuff. Maybe some people heard about the other day in the Pennsylvania assembly that the Republicans, there were a number of Republicans that were infected with the coronavirus. They did not tell the Democrats, and they had them come back and do big committee meetings and big assembly meetings, potentially exposing all the Democrats to this. And the Republicans intentionally did not share that information with the Democrats and then forced an assembly and committee meetings. So this is what we're dealing with.
Again.
This is why I say instead of the Democrats being reactionary and having a four-year plan, we need to be like the Republicans and have a 30-year plan. So by the time my nephew or Phil, your kid, or Wayne, your kid, if you got one, whoever's got kids, grows up, they don't have to, you know, they could take this and move it to the next level substantially. So that's what, let me just say real quick, whoever's got something playing, if you got a TV on the background, just turn your TV down a little bit because you know the phone is picking it up. Anybody that wants to call in, 323-679-0906. We've got a couple of lines open. Butch is going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. And so anybody else who wants to call in and let loose, because we let loose, the brothers are letting loose, we're working it out, we try to come up with a strategy. We're not trying to come up with a strategy. We're definitely come up with a couple of signposts as we begin this strategy, because they've declared war on black people, so it's time for us to have a war council and how we're going to respond. Phil, what were you going to say?
Their game plan hasn't changed. I mean, you know,
exactly.
If you take a football analogy, somebody's going to say, you know what? We're going to run the ball, and that's the plan. And the only way you change the game is when you stop the run. You know, what's happening now is that you in all these protests, you know, you're seeing things go up in flames. You're seeing this. They talk about this violence thing, which happens when the sun goes down. A lot of this are actually white militias, white supremacist militias, testing the defenses and the resources of police departments in these areas. They're sending people in. The fires that were started in Minneapolis were not started by black folks. Black folks ain't arsonists. That's not our weapon of choice. And so when you look around, you see these instigators coming in. Last night at CNN, the building, there was a white guy with a skateboard trying to smash the window. These are provocateurs. They're doing reconnaissance missions. This is what their plan is. And what they do is they hide themselves in the masses because people's attention span is so short. They just say, hey, niggas is wilding. No, look closely. And this is where the camera lens that I talked about comes into play, because the images are there. If you look at them, you will see them. And it's every city. When you look at Ferguson, everything was peaceful. Everything was peaceful. And all of a sudden, boom. And what's the first thing you see? Fire, smoke. Fire was the weapon of choice against freed slaves, burning down churches, burning down homes, burning down cities in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That was their weapon of choice. We need to recognize that and do our own reconnaissance mission, understand the direction and the game plan of our opponent, and start to understand and use mental judo, which uses the other person's strength as their weakness in order to overcome and create our own game plan. But you got to be on point 24/7. You got to be like 7-Eleven, open all the time. You can't do it just when you get on social media.
That's
well,
right.
It's one thing to be open all the time. It's another thing to be informed, and that's, I think, is Lars' issue. I don't want to say here and cast a wide stroke and say that every white person who came out is part of that crowd of provocateurs trying to upset everything. But the bottom, you know, but the bottom line is that there are enough of them out there that understand what pain we are going through. I have a few friends who are very embarrassed every time it happens. You know, we talk about this issue, you think it's going away, and it's not going away. Until we get rid of that phenomenon that allows Central Park Cindy to walk her dog throughout the bird area where sanctuary in Central Park, and feel that she has a right to threaten a black guy with the police because he was just merely calmly instructing her that you're in an inappropriate area with your dog to walk, and asked that she would stay away from him. Had that not been memorialized and on film, Lord only knows what would have happened. But it's the mindset of Central Park Cindy that needs to be changed. How many other women who are and men who are like that walk in the streets?
Right. I mean, that's the exercising of their white supremacy, right? To know that she could call up and just merely say a black man and have that sound in her voice. And the fact that she actually was willing, admitted on camera to, I'm going to lie about it and make it, not only just lie, but make it seem like the most threatening, the most drastic lie. Say she was being threatened. So that would bring out a different, a more extreme response had it but just been a disturbance. Probably the same, actually. So all she had to do was say black guy. But let's just... for argument's sake, let's just say that you would assume that just a regular call of a black guy messing with me would bring less of an extreme response than one that says a black guy threatening me with your white voice. So that means
right.
she was really trying to get him hurt. In other words, and that's, also yes. from what I understand, this guy was actually kind of in an authority position because wasn't he on the Audubon Society or part of
that
in terms
part
of
the Central Park Conservatory or something like that?
Actually, Eric, you know Mustafa Khan, Eric? Mustafa
yes,
Khan.
I do.
He's a very good friend of Mustafa Khan. Mustafa went to college with him. Mustafa knows him for over 35 years. He is a multi-degreed individual. I think he has a PhD and a master's. He is well learned. I think he's a writer. He is a bird watcher. And what Mustafa said to me is he's physically buff. So he not no guy that you know that you know he's not a CPA type looking type dude. So the thing is, if the police had shown up because the call
right.
was an assault in progress, and this
right.
brother. And this is where education is so important, and we need to bring that out in the fight and the battle of what we're talking about, being educated, because you're able to suss out the situation and use the dexterity needed to massage the situation in a way that's going to be conducive for you. He understood
right.
and probably didn't understand. If the cops came out, he couldn't be indignant because he's buff. And it didn't matter
right.
how learned he would be. So
yeah.
he was smart. He recorded it. He left the scene. And it was his sister that made him post that on social media, not him. He didn't
wow.
even want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are things that we, you know, about this brother that people didn't know. And you're right, Eric. The Emmett Till game plan for certain white women. And again, I don't generalize, and I don't generalize.
And don't just put it on the women, too. The men do that as well. The men will do
yes,
that in a second,
especially
too.
Especially the women, though, but that's their fallback. Is he looked at me, a black man, a big, brooding, red-eyed, woolly-haired individual looked at me and is threatening me, and I'm a white woman. And they can use that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do.
Yeah, of course.
And get away
of course.
With it.
They, you know, it's interesting you said about his size, right? Because if you look at the brother, he looks studious. The gentleman, the pictures
right.
I've seen and when he was interviewed, he looks like a studious brother. His manner of speech suggests he's not a hood cat. And just in hearing him speak even on the video, it didn't sound like he was being confrontational with the lady. He just was telling her what was up. And she chose to be
right.
so irate, as a matter of fact. She almost strangled her dog. She couldn't even get the leash out. She almost strangled her dog.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know. I mean, if this thing was the leash was broken or whatever, but, you know, the dog was jumping around like, hey, you're choking me in your anger.
Yes.
So, but this is what they do. they fall back. And this is what I'm talking about, exercising and perpetuating the white supremacist system that we're all in. And that's the difference between the white people that perpetuate that and are the racists. And I think people like, I'm going to be honest to you, Joe Biden are the people that don't perpetuate it. When you bring it up to them, they try to make amends, and their intentions are genuine. Now, a lot of people can talk about the Joe Biden's vote here, his vote there, the crime bill, this and that. That's white supremacy, because he was doing the same thing, and I'm probably repeating myself, that a lot of other Democratic liberal members of Congress were at the same time. And we discussed this earlier, Butch and I. It's not quiet. A lot of black people want crime to be tamped down. It's just that we don't want you coming in our community. We don't want you coming in our community like the Gestapo and making everybody a criminal. That's what stop and frisk was, making everybody a criminal. We want policing in our community just like the next person, right? We're not going along with the system. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But no, I agree with you, Eric. And as I said the other day, Eric Adams, a former cop, borough president of Brooklyn, has intentions of running for citywide office as mayor. He came out publicly and said, "Stop and frisk worked. It just got out of hand. And if you're not being supervised properly, you know, yes, there is an element in our community that we need to anesthetize that progression of taking advantage of each other." And this is one of the things that I grapple with every day. It's bad enough that we have to face the racism out there. It's bad enough that we're living in a world of a pandemic, and then I got to come home to crap that I really don't need to come home to. Don't you all get it? This is about survival instead of trying to cut each other down. But the bottom line is, until some of us get that, you know, and again, you know, my problem with stop and frisk is that you get lost in the sauce. People get caught up in the weeds. It didn't matter who you were.
Let me jump
remember
in here. Let me
go ahead.
Wayne, why don't you wrap it up? I got somebody else on the line I want to bring in. So
yeah,
just
quickly,
just
10-20 years ago, driving to Brooklyn to see my family, 3-piece suit, NYP plates on my car, and I still got stopped. What are you doing in this neighborhood? And I'm just saying, I grew up here, officer. What are you doing in this neighborhood? Whatever happened to home rule? But that's another story. Go
home
on.
Home rule. Okay, I think this is Butch. Who's the other 917? This is you, Butch? Or Marcus?
Yo.
Who?
Butch.
Who this? Oh, okay.
Butch
I
Robert.
Got my drop squad partner here, another one of the council. What's going on? I got Phil on the line, Butch. Say hello to also Wayne Gilman. You know Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman from LIB.
Back in the
absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely.
Hey, how you
absolutely.
Doing?
Absolutely. Brother Gilman, how are you?
All right, just fine. Yourself?
Not bad
so
at
what's,
all.
So what's your thoughts, Butch? You're jumping in here real quick. We're at 8:38. We've got another about 20 minutes. What's your thoughts on the situation or just some points we were talking about earlier?
Which situation are you talking about?
I don't know, right? Which one in particular?
Right there.
A bunch of stuff going on. Which situation is it?
We're talking about now, like little strategies, what we need to do. I think that that was the last point, gentlemen, that we were making about the course of action. And we're talking about white supremacy, some whites who practice white supremacy and perpetuate it, white people who are part of the system and don't realize the benefits or that they've been receiving all of their life, like being able to walk down the street and not get shot, as a part of white supremacy and the benefits. And the difference is when they realize this or realize they might have offended, they attempt to make amends for it and try to make some sort of balance in the picture. And so when the individuals talk about don't vote, we were talking about how that is not a wise decision, because there is really no choice. And that's what we were talking about earlier today, Butch. So why don't you jump off?
Yeah, that's obviously not a wise decision, and probably one that comes as a result of either being young or not being politically astute. I mean, obviously, you know, voting in itself is not the end of the process. Obviously, you can't vote and just go home and expect anything to change. You got to vote
and then you got to stay on them, and you got to pay more attention to voting locally than you do voting nationally. But to act as if we have the kind of electoral power or the kind of political power in this country to just say we're going to withdraw from this process, we're not going to vote for you unless you do so-and-so. Anybody who's ever been involved in any kind of political campaign knows that promises that a politician makes before election day are just that. They're just promises, you know. And if you don't show up after election day, you know, and remind him or her what they promised to do, nothing's going to come of it. So the idea, and I'm with their energy. If you're talking about Charlemagne, I'm with his energy. And to some extent, I'm with Cube's energy. You know, I understand that. But you got to be smarter than just saying, you know, let's withhold the vote. Because that's not ever going to work. You know, that's a fool's
We cannot afford to go through another 4 years like the way we've been going. We can't.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely
it's unacceptable.
And that's something that I think a lot of white voters and a lot of mainstream news outlets don't understand the pragmatism involved with the African American vote. You know, we know who Joe Biden is. You know, we know what Joe Biden did. We know what Joe Biden does. We know what concessions he made or what things he did and who he said it to in order to get in power. We understand all that. You know, we're not locked in. Most African American voters are not naive enough to think that the Democrats love us and the Republicans hate us. We know that nobody's checking for us. All of them are out to get us, you know. So what you do is you pick the person who's going to either do you the less damage over the longest amount of time, and you try to get out of them what you can get out of them. And that's not a wonderful position to be in, but that's life in Babylon.
It's common sense.
Yeah, that's life in Babylon. So the idea that Joe Biden is the Messiah. Obviously, that's foolish. She's not the Messiah. But black people know who white people are going to vote for. Black people know what white people are going to entertain, you know? Regardless of how exciting a candidate Pete Buttigieg was, black people know white America is not going to vote for a gay man for president. They know that's not happening.
Thank you.
Regardless of how intelligent Cory Booker was, regardless of how wonderful Julian Castro was, especially Castro, black people know that the last thing white people are going to do is allow another black man to sit in that chair right after Trump. That's why Trump is there.
Because
they couldn't stand the last Negro that was there. So, you know, there's a pragmatism and a practical nature to the African-American vote that I think a lot of times even young black people don't understand. You know, everybody jumped up in arms when South Carolina jumped behind Biden, and to a lot of people, made it look like he was all of a sudden viable. You know, those of us in the know, like you, Mr. Payne, obviously know that there's money and there are decisions being made higher up in the process. It's not like all of a sudden a bunch of Negroes in South Carolina changed the whole course of the Democratic primary process. It's not quite that simple, you know. So it wasn't just the votes. It was people saying we need this to trigger this process so that we can put Joe Biden up and make him the primary, and that's why everybody else, you know, fell by the wayside. So, you know, this is not a, with regard to what Charlemagne was saying, and Ice Cube to some extent, you know, this is not, you can't jump into this and just start talking, like, you know, none of these solutions are simple. All of this is a long game.
And just to piggyback on your point, Butch, you know, I mean, not to cut you off, but, you know, we have to look at the roster of candidates that the Democratic Party had during the primary process. And, you know, we could not afford to be out there fighting amongst ourselves. There were quite a few that brought a lot of, you know, factual, a lot of programs that probably could have been successful. But we also had a lot of division within the party. You had people who were behind Elizabeth Warren, and they were diehard about that. Forget about Eastern Parkway Bernie. Everybody wanted, you know, there's a contingent of young people who feel that he was the answer. and then you had all these radical liberals that supported his agenda because he was like the maverick in the bunch. But we could not afford to risk his vote again, and that's why I'm glad that they were able to settle that early on and not do what he did to Clinton back in 2016. You know, because
right.
that was another
right.
reason why we're not, you know, the Democrats don't have the White House now. You know,
sure.
regardless of whether she won the popular vote. You know,
sure. he didn't do anything.
Things.
He really didn't do anything to. He got upset because the process left him out, and it felt the Democratic Party did him wrong. My whole thing was, and I've said this to all of you guys before, I felt that he was selling a bill of goods to a lot of people and talking about
yep.
we can all do this and the people yada yada.
Yep.
The nuance
yep.
is Bernie. If you lose, the next day you say, oh well, we tried our best, and you go back to work in the Senate, and the white
yep.
kids, they can ride it out for another 4 years, and all the black and brown people are catching hell.
Exactly.
And so when you sell that, and like we talked about to a certain extent, some of the guys that have an issue with voting, black people voting for Charlemagne. When you're in a lofty position where you're in a position of comfort, you are doing a disservice to people who are not in that same position, and to get them riled up, then leave town or cause them to lose the small and few benefits that they and gains that they have already made because they gambled behind some bullshit that you said. And when it's all
well,
and absolutely go back to
and
the
again,
house.
And again, it's a very good point, because the one thing I will say, having been a veteran of radio, the media business is very unforgiving. To quote the late, great Eddie O.J., you better have your F.U. money in the background, because you never know when your number is up. I don't care how popular you are now, you could be done with, you know, tomorrow. And then what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. You've got to think long term. I mean, these guys, you know, you got to play a chess game. I mean, part of the path, and I guess maybe what we want to do is lay at least a fucking blueprint for the game plan. Vote for president. Take your ass back out there 2 years later. Vote for, do your research. Vote in the midterms. Vote in your local elections, certainly within
mm-hmm.
your statewide elections. So you give the Democrat, give the party of your choice the power in the state legislature. Because as we know, that in places like North Carolina and some of these other red states, the Republican state legislatures are doing some really crazy things. But
oh.
they're setting it up, and they're putting up these state judges for these people to get, you know, they're elevating people up the ladder to be in a position for federal judgeships, which we know is really what the Republicans and Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch, hasn't doing any other work other
exactly.
than
yes.
working on getting those
yes.
judges in place.
And that was a very important point you made, Eric, because that's one of the major things they blocked Obama from doing, because those positions are you die. That's the only way to lose that position is
mm-hmm.
through natural death. So it transcends administrations. It transcends changes in the Senate and in the House. Those things mark where the nation is going.
Exactly.
That's the highest court. And so that point alone, what you're making, is very valid as far as why Trump was in there. Mitch McConnell even laughed and giggled over what he blocked Obama from doing. And this
right.
is why they want Trump there, so they can put those people, those justices, in position. And that's a very important point.
It appears, and I'm going to get you guys' opinions about this, it appears... it doesn't appear. I mean, we've got proof that clearly they're willing to break their own rules, right? I've always found when people talk about the Constitution, it's a certain amount of bullshit in even mentioning the Constitution as the greatest document for human endeavor or whatever, you know, whatever bullshit they try to say about the Constitution, because the cats that were signing the Constitution had slaves out in the barn. So how are you going to sign a document that says all men are created equal when you got human beings in the barn across the street living like animals? And I know that that's because you think they're not humans and you think they're animals. But if that's the jump-off point, you know, I got a problem with that. And you're going to
right.
tell me this is one of the greatest documents in human history, the Declaration of Independence? Well, it couldn't be that motherfucking great because you got people in chains across the street. You know? And so I'm talking about the myth that they create to build up the society that they boast about, which is not, you know, which is smoke and mirrors, right? It's a functioning society, to me, to serve the well-off, obviously.
Well, it ain't functioning now.
It ain't functioning for everybody else. It's still functioning for them. Trust.
Yeah, to a certain
extent. Well,
you know?
It's still functioning for them, but I think even now, I mean, if you caught Cornel West talking to Anderson Cooper yesterday, I don't know how
yes,
that Cornel was,
yes.
but he lost his mind.
What
yes,
happened to
him
again?
He lost it in his mind. The first thing he said was, "This is a failed American state. It's a failed American state."
Failed social experiment. I think that's what he said.
Yeah. Well, he said the country was failing, and he listed the areas where it was failing. I mean, obvious, you know, what he did, and I'm glad he did, what he did was he flipped it. Instead of us talking about the problems with America in terms of what African-Americans don't have access to, he turned it around and associated it with what you were saying, which is, you know, this is all mythology. It's all the mythology of white patriarchy. It's all the mythology of white supremacy. And what he was saying is, based on those organs, based on those documents, based on the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all those things, it's failing. It's not working. Now, we know it's failing because of white supremacy, but he said, obviously, we have a situation where none of your institutions are hitting on all cylinders, you know? And he talked about the pandemic. You know, he talked about what was going on in the country. Clearly, it's broken down. And, you know, I think that we're coming to a point where white Americans, white middle-class Americans, you know, they have to begin to realize this. They have to begin to see that. How they act on it, that's something different. But they have to begin to see it because this is falling apart. You know, the system is falling apart.
I'll tell you this much. I'm sorry that I missed that interview. Sometimes Cornell... You know, I don't know where he's coming from. I mean, he got into this thing with Tavis Smiley back in the day, criticizing Obama, and left a bitter taste in my mouth. You know, I'm with the brother on some things, but, you know, I just need to get some clarity as to this is like black and white, what's going on here. We're in a state of anarchy, and the provocateurs have a lot to do with it, but it's the culture that's being cultivated by the president, and you know, this is nothing new. You know, this agenda is nothing new. So for him to come out and say, well, you know, this is part of the process, I mean, I just don't quite understand it. You know, it's just one of those things.
And so, I'm not necessarily one that's big on Cornell anymore either, since the whole, you know, him and Tavis left no opportunity unturned in their dissection of Barack Obama's presidency.
Right.
But obviously with great
this
thinkers.
This was the old,
you know,
Cornel West.
Huh?
Yeah.
This was the old Cornell West.
Yes.
Oh, this was the old
Cornel
West.
He put it down
West.
In 3 minutes. In 3 minutes, he put it down last night.
For 3 minutes, he put it down?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
This is old Cornel West. This is pre his lover spat with Barack. You know, this is pre all that. He was laying it out. He was, you know, doing the thing that he was at his best, like he used to be, just like when Michael Eric Dyson is at his best with dropping science. When both of them get tied up in a whole pseudo black liberation theology, theorisms and all that, they kind of get murky and kind of get cloudy and get preachy. But last night, he was on it. And you could tell he was on it because Anderson Cooper didn't know where he was.
and Mr. Dyson was on earlier. Mr. Dyson was on earlier, and he was, you know, the difference is, which I think there's a focus now, the muscle memory is kicking in for these gentlemen. This is something they can pull back on. It's not something that they're creating as they're going. This is something, this is in their wheelhouse, man. They know this shit. So this is muscle memory, and they're using life experiences, looking back in retrospective of what they've experienced and trying to say, I can talk about this shit in Cliff Notes version, but you don't have to read the whole book for me to get you to understand what I'm talking about. And both of those gentlemen did that yesterday.
Well, I, and the thing is, I'm more of a Michael Eric Dyson fan because I think he has just a very culture, not just culture, but I mean, it's like everything that he said to a certain extent is on point. And I know sometimes you can get lost in his in some of his philosophies as to why things happen the way they do. But, you know, these people have been out there in the trenches a long time. You know, I've watched them, you know, and the deal is that it's a breath of fresh air that we have such intellectuals in our community to vibe with those outside the community, you know. I'd love to see them both on the world stage when they're going against some of these Harvard types. But the bottom line is, the issues still prevail, and we can't afford to be cutting each other down.
No, that's true. And we certainly, I mean, you know, want to be able to come together. Really would be nice for that younger set that listens to people like Charlamagne and Puffy. And, you know, I don't even know how many of them really still do, you know, whether they really, how much of a pulse on the community that those brothers have. But it's definitely about getting the young ones who have become enthralled, you know, social media, hip-hop, the music industry, all of this stuff has allowed a lot of these younger artists, I'm talking about hip-hop now as I look at the PE video on my TV screen, they really seem to really revel in being accepted by the mainstream. And it, to me, to a certain degree, back as opposed to back in the 90s when we were actively, once in a while we did music videos, Phil, where you were doing a lot of them. It seemed to be the hip-hop artists back then, and that's when we had Public Enemy and others, Stetsasonic, were more politically aware about stuff and weren't as caught up into, okay, we're mainstream now, you know, we're pop culture now. And a lot of these kids, not all, but a lot of them seem to be reveling. And we got about 3 minutes left, guys. A lot of them seem to be reveling in the fact I made it. I'm hip hop. I'm mainstream. You know, kind of like the stuff people just said. What happened to Lil Wayne, right? I mean, apparently, from what I understand, he went all the way left. I'm not the biggest fan, and I'm not of that age group. So, say it again.
Because they became a brand. They became a brand. You know, the
right,
other ones
exactly.
were just glad to be heard. Now, when you're a brand, it's different. If it's a different focus. Yes.
Right. Now you're Jordan Brand and you can't bring down the price of your sneakers even though
you
your brothers
Republicans
and sisters
buy sneakers too. Right. Exactly.
That's an old conversation. That's an old Drop Squad officer
that's
argument
another,
we used to have.
That's another hour's worth of talk.
Back in the day about whether Mike should have lowered the price of his sneakers once he saw cats were shooting each other or just keep the cost. And I think before
right.
the book said, hey, Mike can't be responsible for motherfuckers' actions out in the street, which is true.
Hey, man.
But
Mike got to pay,
you know,
Mike got to pay the cable bill like everybody else.
That's right. That's right. Keeps a lot of money, a lot of light to shine on them trophies. There's a lot of bills and whatnot. So we got a minute 47. I don't know if Phil, Butch, if you want to, in 90 seconds, you want to give a little last thoughts, a couple of last words to the people's.
Mr. Robinson,
go, Phil.
It's your floor.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well,
Go ahead, Bush.
I want what people are doing on the street to continue tenfold. I want them to not go for the okey-doke in Minnesota. The governor tonight said we got a lot of people coming in from other places, causing trouble, setting things on fire. These are not people from Minnesota. So I want all of you to stay home tonight and be calm so we can get these other people off of the street. And I guarantee you that we're going to go after and we're going to give justice for George Floyd. Don't go for the okey-doke. White people have been infiltrating our movement since day one. Don't go for the okey-doke. Get your ass out the house. Do what you need to do and let these devils know that we mean business.
Okay? There it is.
Let these devils know that we mean business. If they would have arrested that cracker on day one, this wouldn't be happening. And until they arrest those other three jackasses, it's going to keep going. Okay?
Yep. There
freedom
it is.
Freedom is not free. Freedom is not free. Get your ass out there and make as much trouble as you can. like John Lewis said, get yourself in some good trouble. That's what we got to do.
There it is.
That's what we got to do.
Got to go. There it is. Drop squad. Phil,
thanks,
real quick.
Guys.
Which,
yes.
Real quick, Phil.
Butch said it all. Can't top that.
All right. Wayne, talk to you later.
Hey,
thanks,
I was
Phil.
Just
going to
concur. You know, all
right,
I mean, I want to give the benediction, but, you know, keep hope alive. Stay off the streets.
There it is. There it is, my brother. This has been the K Thompson Live Show, or this is K's Son and Friends. I'm the son. Those are my friends. Co-host Wayne Gilman, my brother Butch Robbins, my brother Phil Maylard. This is how we do. The struggle continues. We ain't playing. All right, thanks everybody for listening. We're going to be doing this a little bit more often because we got to have a Trump watch, devil watch. All right, thanks. We'll listen to you. We'll talk to you again.
Please attribute this to the fact that for the first time in 30 years, you couldn't even buy a beer in Washington. The civil rights marchers needed no stimulus like that. They provided their songs that range from the sacred to the jubilee, but with the one recurring theme, loss of 20 million Negroes. Washington, D.C., 1963. Democracy speaks in a mighty voice.
Check this out, man. We're rolling this way. That march in 1963, that's a bit of nonsense. We ain't rolling like that no more. Matter of fact, for Joe Black America, we rolling up with seminar press conferences and straight up rallies. Am I right? We're going to get what we got to get.